Welcome to another edition of Radio What's in the Talk Show, where I discuss the latest happenings in pop culture and entertainment. And nothing is more bigger happening than in entertainment, and especially the gaming landscape, as what happened today, or I guess yesterday, if you're listening to this on the Thursday, the 20th of January. Yesterday, Microsoft buys Activision Blizzard for $68.7 million in what could possibly could be the biggest gaming story, not just of the year, and I know it's January, but of, I guess, the last decade, maybe ever even. So I thought we'd do an impromptu discussion with it. My name is Buddy Watson, of course, and for that discussion, alongside Paul James from Player 2 and the Dev Diary podcast. Paul James, how's your day been?
It's been a hell of a day. I woke up randomly at about 3:30 in the morning, and obviously the news was already out there at that point, and I was busy, you know, retweeting stuff that, like, previews and bits and pieces we had go up overnight, and then I saw the news, like, oh, fuck, what's the point? Like, no one's going to see this shit. Everyone's going to be talking about Activision, so whatever. And also, just a little clip to them straight away, like, 68.7, you couldn't have just upped it by just a couple million, make it around 69, everyone be happy, jokes are plenty, we're all good. Now everyone's just rounding off to 70 billion and it's no good.
Yeah, and rounding off is quite dangerous as well, because, like, yeah, you know, if it was like
$3 billion,
yeah, it was $68.7, you know, $68.70. You would just round up to 70 cents. That's only 30 cents, but if you're rounding it up to like 70 million, that's like $300 million more. So yeah, it's very dangerous to round in these scenarios. But yeah, well, I guess we'll kick it off. What was your instant reaction? Like, did you, because it's quite of like a double take type moment. Like, is this real?
Yeah.
That's the magnitude of the announcement.
Yeah. I mean, again, waking up at that awkward time of the night, a little bit out of it anyway, because you've just, what the hell's going on here? Why am I up? Checking through the feed, and yeah, I was completely floored by everything. I had no idea what to make of it all. Which I should be used to this by now as a PlayStation fan after what happened with Bethesda a couple of years ago, but this one, as much as I have even less to do with Activision in terms of myself and my gaming tastes, outside of Spyro, bring them back, this just, it knocked me off my feet again, because this is even bigger. Ignoring the dollars and cents component of it, which is obviously magnitudes bigger as well, the implications, knowing what Call of Duty means, knowing what World of Warcraft means, Diablo, Overwatch, all of those sorts of massive franchises, and to know that they're all of a sudden, presumably, and we'll dive into the finer details shortly, but presumably they're going to be exclusive to Xbox in the future. That's a crazy, crazy outcome, and can really completely change the face of where the console wars, not the bullshit that goes on between the fans, but the console wars between Sony and Microsoft, who's trying to take a top spot and be that dominant force in the industry, really changes what this whole thing's going to look like in the future.
I love that, like, somewhere in a room, like, if Microsoft and PlayStation and Nintendo are all in there, it's like this massive, like, race to get to the door, and, you know, or get to that favorite toy, or collecting or hoarding all the toys, maybe. And Nintendo's just in the corner, not worried about anything that's happening, playing on their own, not even disturbed by any of this.
They're
stuff
just kicking back with their Switch at the table, going, you guys do whatever you want.
That's right. To put it into perspective, 2019, Disney brought 21st Century Fox for $71.3 billion. So this is almost the equivalent of Disney buying Fox in the gaming landscape. So it is massive. I don't think I've come across a new story that's bigger than this in video games.
No,
period.
It's the biggest.
Just because of, like, the, I guess, the potential for impact and what it could mean for, like, for the next 10, 20 years. Who knows?
Well, the,
going forward, ever.
The deal itself is obviously insane and unprecedented. Again, doesn't even compare to what happened with Bethesda the other year. But then you add that on top of the controversies that Activision themselves have been embroiled in for the last 6 to 9 months already. That's a whole other wrinkle to the whole thing that has obviously been outlined in the various official releases so far. But, like, there's this extra layer of controversy and a human resource element to it that makes this whole thing even more fascinating.
Mm. And that just acquiring all the property and IP and studios that developed that. But I guess you're also acquiring the legal trouble and kind of the bad culture that goes along with that as well. So it's not just a simple, we own everything now and we can just let things run its course and we can stamp our Xbox logo on the corner of something and away we go, all guns, you know, all ships blazing. There'll be quite a bit of work to do, I guess, like corporate structure, right people, culture shifts. Culture shifts are so hard to change because you can't do it immediately. So I'm guessing there's going to be a massive
purge or exodus.
I guess we'll get to that in a minute. But this is what Phil Spencer said in the blog post in the early hours of the morning yesterday, Australian time. As a team, we're on a mission to extend the joy and community of gaming to everyone on the planet. Thank you, Phil. We all know that gaming is the most vibrant and dynamic form of entertainment worldwide, and we've experienced the power of social connection and friendship that gaming makes possible. As we pursue this mission, it is incredibly exciting to announce that Microsoft has agreed to acquire Activision Blizzard. Shocked face. Over many decades, the studios and teams that make up Activision Blizzard have earned vast wellsprings of joy and respect from billions of people all over the world. We're incredibly excited to have the chance to work with the amazing, talented, dedicated people across Activision Publishing, Blizzard Entertainment, Beenox, Demonware, Digital Legends, High Moon Studios, Infinity Ward, King, Major League Gaming, Radical Entertainment, Raven Software, Sledgehammer Games, Toys for Bob, Treyarch, hang on, I think I need some water, get my breath back, and every team across Activision Blizzard. So that's a long list, and that's just so impressive to kind of... That's big Phil energy right
and
there.
Please, and it's one of the things that I don't think we'll spend that much time discussing throughout this show because it really doesn't align too much with our typical gaming interests, but please don't underestimate the importance of King in this whole thing.
It's huge.
Candy Crush is still it feels like the entire decade now, being the biggest mobile game in the world. It makes money hand over fist and will continue to do so. And I mean, Microsoft have dabbled in the mobile space a little bit over the journey in terms of dedicated mobile games, not just, you know, cloud functionality, xCloud and all those sort of things, like dedicated mobile titles over the journey. Gears Pop, for example, but that came and went. And there's been a whole bunch of other examples over the journey and they've not worked. But King, this is just like when Take-Two picked up Zynga last week, the week before.
Yep.
Like this is a team that's built their livelihood on this expertise in this specific space. Now, I don't think that's suddenly going to mean that you're going to get a Candy Crush version that's just like Master Chief heads and Marcus Fenix heads. And
You could.
I don't think it'll happen because Phil won't allow that. But like, this is insane dollars. Like they will earn the money that they've spent back, according to some reporting, by the time the contract actually, like the ink actually dries on this thing, they will have already earned the $70 billion back.
Yeah, they just put into like a savings trust or whatever and let it generate interest or do whatever they need to do to evade tax from it to its best of knowledge. And wham, cash money. Drive away today. Candy Crush is huge. Like, I think it's one of those games that almost everyone's... I think at one point, everyone of my friend's mums was playing Candy Crush. And the fact that Bloomberg had an article before about... I think I know a lot of people were angry about it, but like metaverse in the title and what it means for the metaverse and Facebook gaming and stuff. I guess a lot of people were angry about that. Like, oh, this is just Blizzard, blah, Activision, nothing to do with the metaverse. But I guess like you think about Facebook gaming now into the metaverse, that eating into Oculus and having to have Facebook passwords for that, games that kind of took off on Facebook that are kind of like your farm bills, all that kind of stuff. That is in the same vein as a Candy Crush. So
it's all connected.
That's right. It's all connected, man. That's all weaved in together. So, So from there, I guess the big question is, what does it mean for the industry? So, I guess it's a bit of an open-ended thing. Is this a good thing, Paul, or is it a bad thing, or is it somewhere in between with elements of both? Like, what are you feeling? What do you think the consensus is feeling at the moment?
Like, I'm thrilled that you've kind of pitched it the way you have because I, conveniently enough, actually had like a pros and cons thread early in the day. Now, look, there was a few fuck Bobby Kotick's and those sort of things thrown in for a bit of a laugh along the way. I stand by the sentiment, though. Like, there are good and bad aspects to this thing. It's fantastic that Microsoft and like, they're known for having a great culture there these days within their Xbox studios. Again, and Phil Spencer highlighted in a discussion about Activision recently, they're not, like, Microsoft themselves have made indiscretions over the journey. They're not immune to this stuff. No one is. You get a couple of the wrong people in there and it can really mess things up. They've experienced it in the past, but they are known currently for having an incredible culture, and it's going to do a lot of good to fix that sort of thing up. Mm. On the downside, you've taken a major chip off the table, just like what happened with Bethesda. If we're looking at the industry broader than just what it means for Microsoft, for Xbox, for people even on xCloud on their phones, obviously that's one of the big things that they talk about, is you don't need the console anymore, you can still play it on your phone and that sort of thing. I understand that they can reach billions and billions of people through that, but there's still a huge audience there that potentially is about to lose the biggest hardcore gaming franchise in the world, as well as a whole bunch of others that are also very big. Again, World of Warcraft has taken a nosedive in recent years, and Final Fantasy XIV is eating its lunch at the moment, but it's still massive.
Overwatch is trying to make a sequel that's exactly like the first one. And
yeah, Overwatch is weird. Overwatch is weird. Diablo Immortal, I'm keen on. Diablo 4, I'm keen on. But these are all massive franchises still, regardless of some detractors, and we've got concerns about some and other things we're positive on. Everyone else has got different, like, there's lots of different opinions out there, but they still attract tens of millions of players. So it's huge. Yep. And that number's going to drop, because you're potentially taking your whole audience out, maybe two in the case of some, because you might also lose... There's some games that do come across to Nintendo, not a lot of them, but there's a few that come across to Nintendo. You're going to lose a couple million there potentially as well. Their player bases are potentially going to drop, but Microsoft doesn't care, because it's going to inevitably lift those Game Pass subscriptions, and that's what they're all about these days.
Mm. And speaking of Game Pass subscriptions, Phil Spencer was quoted... talking about Game Pass before. He said, upon close, we will offer as many Activision Blizzard games as we can within Xbox Game Pass and PC Game Pass, both new titles and games from Activision's Blizzard's incredible catalog. We also announced today that Game Pass now has more than 25 million subscribers. As always, we look forward to continuing to add more value and more great games to Game Pass. So the first thing that really surprised me from that statement was the 25 million subscribers to Game Pass.
Huge.
I thought it would be more, to be honest. Like, you look at a service like PlayStation Plus, right? That's like 48 million. And I guess that's kind of half of the... Maybe that's half of what 100 million or whatever, 13
yeah,
million.
Yeah, about 40
combined. 30, 40, so maybe, 40%. Maybe it is a 40% uptake across PS4 and... your PS5 and in a little sales that it's done. But then if Microsoft is only around the 40 million, well, that's... But then you're taking a Game Pass. Yeah, it's a good conversion rate, but I just felt like it was going to be more than... I don't know, maybe I'm a bit naive. When, like, it is a huge number, but...
Yeah, it's massive. It's super impressive in that respect, but it is... Yeah, I mean, the PlayStation Plus one's an interesting comparison, because PlayStation Plus, like Gold back for the longest time as well, Xbox Live Gold, was necessary for anyone who wanted to play online. So your hand was forced a little bit. Here, you're not necessarily. And there is this weird pushback still from some. They're like, well, I don't play that many games, so I'm not going to get Game Pass.
Yep.
The more time progresses, the more likely those games that you love playing are going to pop up on Game Pass anyway. And then if you want to just try something at random at some point, you can. So it's a weird, stubborn sort of perspective, but everyone's got their own priorities and things they want to do with their life, so by all means, do what you like. The number is huge. It's going to only go up now because, and I'm working on the assumption here that eventually post 2020, probably from 2024 onwards, Call of Duty is presumably going to be exclusive to the Xbox platform. And
well, you can put old Call of Duties on it right now. Like, say they put
that too.
So the deal doesn't take place until next year, 2023, March 2023. I think they're the start, like the end of their...
Mid-year 2023. That's their fiscal year.
I guess as soon as that happened, we saw it with Bethesda. Immediately, a bunch of titles were thrown onto Game Pass within the next few months.
Yeah.
I think most of them were. So...
You expect the same thing here.
Yeah, you could throw a back catalog. You could throw Crash Insane Trilogy or Crash 4.
They are going to throw as much Crash it as possible because it just twists the knife for the PlayStation fans.
Yeah, you thought exclusivity on Rise of the Tomb Raider for 1 year was bad. Well, fucking hell. Now it's even worse.
It'll be interesting to see how they go with the exclusivity and those sorts of things. I mean, their messaging with Bethesda was, you know, if there's a legacy there, then we're going to respect and honor that legacy. Now, we've not seen the proof in the pudding yet because they haven't brought out any of those sorts of games that fit that mold. We haven't seen a Fallout, for example, that as much as there's probably more still attaching it to the Xbox side. When Fallout 3 came out, which is kind of the revival for the franchise, it came out to PS3 and to 360 at the exact same time. There was no, like, you could say it's 50-50. We haven't seen any of those sorts of things tested. It's fair to say that quite a number of these, not so much the Blizzard, because obviously they're far more rooted in PC, first and foremost. But on the Activision side, most of their stuff's kind of aligned with PlayStation, from the obvious ones like Crash and Spyro to even Call of Duty. Now, obviously, we did see Call of Duty was aligned with Xbox through the 360 PS3 era, but in people's minds, and even this year, when Call of Duty 2022 is revealed, it's still going to be promoted as being... like, any ad is going to have the PlayStation thing at the end, despite the fact that they are on track to be owned by the direct competition.
Deathloop syndrome.
Yeah, which is you know, weird, and it was weird with Deathloop, and it'll be weird with Ghostwire Tokyo. But those were new IPs in the case of Ghostwire and Deathloop. It's more jarring for something that is well and truly entrenched, well and truly established, and as of the time that the deal goes through, is associated with the competitor. Mm. So does this... now, I note that they haven't used that... They haven't trotted out that legacy language in the case of this Activision deal. Maybe very careful, legal's gone through it and all that sort of thing. But, like, are they going to approach things in a similar sort of fashion? Does that mean that we do see Call of Duty? Now, Warzone will still persist because that's kind of what they did with Bethesda and Fallout 76 and Elder Scrolls Online. Is it those games that they're kind of perpetual things? They'll keep popping up. Minecraft is another example as well.
Mm.
But
they're too big not to put on every single platform.
Exactly. So Warzone will do it, but what happens with the core Call of Duty game? Yeah, do they actually do what people have been begging Activision to do for years, which is split the campaign and the multiplayer? Maybe the multiplayer pops up on PlayStation, but if you want to get that campaign, or maybe they reverse it somehow, we'll put the campaign, because everyone comes in for multiplayer, that's the reality of it. We'll give you the campaign, we'll tease you a little bit, but if you want anything else, you want the thing that you really, really want to play, you're going to have to come over here.
Yep. Phil Spencer... also had a statement on exclusivity in regards to Microsoft's plans to keeping some of Activision games for PlayStation consoles, but they'll also keep some content exclusive to Xbox. So, this wasn't on Phil Spencer. This was someone else in the company. This was from a Bloomberg article. I'll just say to players out there who are playing Activision Blizzard games on Sony's platforms, it's not our intent to pull communities away from that platform, and we remain committed to that. So I read into that is, intent. Like you were saying before, it's not our intent, but unfortunately, these are the consequences of what we've done.
This is business, people. Wake up, kiddies.
Yeah. I see that as like communities. The wording that you did there and what you said before about Minecraft and being on every platform as like a multiplayer-based type statement. So, you know, your big Call of Duties or Warzones, I can't see the multiplayer aspects like kind of not being on PlayStation platforms.
Microsoft that made the decision about Minecraft back in the day is very different to the Microsoft of, you know, 2020 and onwards. The Phil Spencer kind of global domination reign that he's got at the moment. Like, yeah, and they used the word intent with Bethesda as well. And then they...
Yeah, that's right. When they first came out, they said, you know, they didn't really say a lot. And then later on down the line, it was like, all right, cool, Starfield's exclusive, Elder Scrolls 6 is exclusive. So I'm guessing if there's a new Doom or any kind of Bethesda game going forward, they're also going to be exclusive. I can't, even though they haven't said that, they have only kind of reiterated that Starfield and Scrolls will be, or Skyrim will be exclusive. I just assume that nothing will be coming to PlayStation now. It'll all be exclusive. There's a new Doom, there's a new Wolfenstein, there's a new Dishonored, Deathloop 2, even. I could see that happening back in the days.
That'll be an interesting one, but yeah.
Well, there used to be those scenarios where Titanfall 1 or there was other games that would launch on that were Xbox 360 or Xbox One exclusives, I think. But Titanfall is a big example. There's another one, like maybe Dead Rising.
Yeah, there was Dead Rising 3 at the beginning of the Xbox One generation.
Yeah, or Dead Rising 1. But there's a few scenarios there where the first games in the franchise were exclusive to Xbox and then the second one ended up coming to PlayStation platforms. Yeah. Anyway.
And then later on, the original came across.
The original came across. So who knows what they'll do there. But what do you think does this do anything for the Game Pass, like from a retail and consumer level? Does this do anything to the price of Game Pass? So Game Pass at the moment is $10.95 on console. You can get Game Pass Ultimate for $15.95 a month. I don't think you can buy it.
Yeah, I think it's a month.
I don't think you can buy it at a cheaper rate for a year, like you can do with your Plus and your Gold. So $16 a month, $11 just for the Game Pass portion without the live. There are a lot of those deals where you're resubscribing you're out and you can upgrade or come back in, or if you've never used the service for the dollar as well. And there's kind of some hacks there that you can do if you've not used Game Pass before. Or even if you do have that access to that $1 deal where you can buy your Xbox Live Gold up to 2 years, so stack your account and then just use the $1 upgrade and it will trick your account into doing 2 years of Xbox Game Pass. Anyway, so
that's cool.
Really? I tell people all the time. So if you've never used Game Pass, there are hacks that you can. If you see that $1 offer on your console or on your PC, then just buy Live for X amount of years, 2 years, and then just upgrade to the Game Pass, and it will trick it into upgrading it for the 2 years. So
I'm just a more honest individual than you, I guess.
For the consumer pool. I don't care about these big corporate. I'm for the players. Yeah. I'm not about these big corporations and businesses taking all our money. So if there's a hack out there for Joe Boyle on the street,
That's good. I'll keep that in mind.
That's great. Yeah, yeah. What do you think it does for the price of Game Pass?
I mean, it's got to go up. I don't think it was
what does it go up to. We're obviously, if you're listening to this from overseas, there's an Australian dollars. I'm not sure what the American currency is or the UK currency.
No, so actually, really interestingly,
I just don't give a fuck.
I heard it earlier today. So apparently, Game Pass in the US is $15. So we're not getting Australia taxed on this thing badly at all. We're copping an extra 95 cents.
Mm.
All right, great. But yeah, I mean, I see it going up at least $5. We see it happening with Netflix. In fact, I walked into my living room the other day and my wife's watching TV and boom, the notification pops up on the screen saying, hey, we're going to be elevating your Netflix subscription price to whatever, on whatever date. I don't know. I tuned out. She's paying for it, not me. But we're going to see the same.
You say your wife was paying for it?
She pays for Netflix.
Yeah, I think you're both paying for it, Paul.
Okay, yeah, sure. Whatever's hers.
Are you telling me you don't pull your household money into one thing? Never mind.
No, actually, but that's a whole other conversation. We kind of do, I don't know. Paying off home loans is weird. The prices inevitably got to go up. And you know, the rationale could be interesting. Like, it's obviously they're adding so much there. They don't need to add up the price to offset the amount that they've spent on Activision. Again, I highlighted before that by mid-2023, they will have earned that money back already. So that's not the concern, but it is the continual thing. Like, they've added so much, they can get away with it. And you know, increased demand means server costs. There's going to be those sorts of things that they can use to justify an increased price. So they will. And the question still gets bandied around, is Game Pass profitable even prior to Activision? And I think that conversation actually still has a lot of merit. And Microsoft, the fact that they won't say it is, maybe says that it isn't. So you add Activision to the mix, and that's even obviously more cost that's going in there with the development of games and all those sorts of things, the continual development of games. That they've got to up the price to try and offset that. And that, as much as Satya Nadella has really bought into what Phil Spencer and the team is doing, and it's fantastic because Microsoft regimes haven't really given the gaming sector all that much love, and that's why PlayStation's continued to kick their teeth in for years, and Nintendo as well. They've got someone at the top now who believes in what Phil and the team are up to, and that's fantastic for them. So he's fueling the fire, but he also can't afford to have the Xbox division in the red time after time after time. So you've got to elevate the price. You're not selling retail, like you're not trying. Sorry, they do put boxes on shelves, but they're not prioritizing the retail side of things at all. It's all about Game Pass. So you need to elevate that price.
I would say, as someone who works in a retailer, I would love to know some other games retailers' numbers on Xbox numbers. I can only really go on my own kind of small scope, but
yeah.
When we have a new release coming in, there's way less copies of Xbox than what is like PlayStation 4.
What sort of ratio 5. Would you be thinking? Like 8-2 out of every 10?
Close? That sounds pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That sounds pretty good.
That was completely off the top of my head. I haven't heard anything else, but
yeah, maybe 10-3. So
yeah, okay,
yeah. So maybe it depends on the title, but I know that like Extinction is a good example. Like we're not getting a huge amount of copies for that, but
Extraction.
Extraction. Yeah. Sorry, we're getting a lot less on Xbox, but I'm wondering like how are we even going to sell these because it's on Game Pass, and it's something that I've noticed even like software wise as a whole is generally less amount of Microsoft or Xbox stock. Anyway, except for like probably Halo and then Forza, even though they're on Game Pass, they still did good like physically. But
yeah, I bought a physical Halo because I'm a bit of a sucker for it. But
and then you actually like own it and you're not having to rely on yourself paying $16 a month
Let's shoot that down. The Halo disc is like you pop it in and it's just like, great, you can play this thing now. Now download the game. So, like, it's not...
Oh, wow. It's a license.
It's horrific.
You brought a license on a CD.
Yeah, it's horrific. I just bought it because Halo is one of those franchises. I wanted to have it. Gears, I'll do the same.
Yeah, so I'm wondering what the implication is now with, like, games like Call of Duty, your Crash, your Spyro. Not that they're, you know... It's mainly just Call of Duty. They're the ones that have the big one that you see all the time, every time of year, everywhere. I'm wondering what that would do for the amount of software units that are actually in retail stores and what that does for retailers. Like one of the biggest games of the year. Well, the biggest revenue game of the year, 13 years straight.
And you won't get to sell it.
What that does if it goes to Game Pass or if it's you're not going to be selling as many copies now anyway. And if that game's bringing you into a retailer to purchase other things as well, like... What is the overall effect on gaming?
That's actually a really interesting perspective that I've not heard broached at all today, is what that means for the retail side of things, because it is a massive draw card for retail, Call of Duty, in particular. Obviously, some of the other Activision IP is great for that, but there's nothing of that scale of Call of Duty each year. And yeah, if it does go exclusive, and if it, at that point, it's obviously going to go to a Game Pass. Phil has already indicated as such. I mean, you've just highlighted with the ratio of a game like Rainbow Six Extraction, which is, again, not the magnitude of Call of Duty, but that ratio is what we're talking about here. And you're talking 10-3, 10 PlayStation every 3 Xbox. Like, that's... When you take
that could be 10, some of the bigger titles as well.
Yeah, that 10 is now suddenly non-existent. And that 3, like, that might even just drop to 2 out of every 3, or maybe even 1 out of every 3, because people are going, well, now all of these other things that I love, maybe those people who were right on the edge of going to Game Pass, but they didn't quite have all the things they wanted, and all of a sudden Call of Duty's there as well. Okay, well, I may as well make the jump now, because it's way cheaper. Like, I don't have to pay for Call of Duty anymore.
Yep.
You don't have to pay. You know, you pay for your subscription.
Yes.
But I don't have to pay for Call of Duty anymore, so...
Well, it's like Netflix, like a lot of, or whatever your designated go-to streaming service is in the household. You don't look at it as like, I pay for this thing. You just look at it as like a need, I need this, like internet, you know what I mean? You don't go, I'm paying for this. You basically have to because you can't live without it. It's almost to the... Now, obviously, streaming service, you can live without, and so you can live without Game Pass or whatever, but it's getting to a point mentally where that's what you it's
going to become a utility
expense. So. That's a you treat it as a utility. So obviously, my sample size is very small in scope, and I can only kind of say what I've seen, but even to a degree where like you sell an Xbox S or you sell, you're not selling any software anyway. You might be good at selling like an Xbox Game Pass card with it. And even the X's, I feel like are even the same.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just using for Game Pass, where as I sell a PlayStation 5, whatever, people are walking out with, more software titles. Yeah, it's
And I mean, you're right in terms of what you said for like our little vacuum, because we are in Australia where the internet's not quite as good, so maybe there's more of that inclination to go and buy the disc. Don't have to spend 20 hours downloading the game or whatever the case is. But in regions of the world where the internet's way better, you've got to assume that that proportion that are buying the game physically on Xbox, considering they could potentially pick it up on Game Pass, is probably even less again. So...
And you talk about the price, like a lot of people buying physical media because it is cheaper than digital front, you know, storefront. Like if you're at a retailer that doesn't rip you off, $100 game on the store, other retailers, you know, some retailers you can get it for $69. Some retailers you can get it for $79. Well, launch day deals or whatever, or normal price deals, it's $21 a pop. And then you can trade the disc, sell the disc, do whatever, and get some money back. So for price conscious people, not having that physical option or less physical options on offer, because a lot of the games are going to Game Pass and you can't afford Game Pass, you don't have internet or that, so that could also kind of be a stick in the mud too.
And
so
Game Pass, even at the proposed $20, you know, number that I kicked around before, but potentially even higher, that's in terms of Aussie dollars, that's $240 a year. That's still just two games at our current full retail, basically. So it's not,
but you think about it, it's two full games a year, right? But can you keep paying $240 a year every year for eternity? Like if I can spend...
That's where subscription services get you, though, right? Because they expect
you to...
Yeah, but
I can afford that this year, but if I can't afford that next year, then I'm not playing Forza, I'm not playing Halo, I'm not playing my games from the past. Whereas maybe if I'm only playing two or three games, I'll just buy it anyway instead of using Game Pass. But that's another argument.
Yeah,
so.
that's a fair perspective, though.
Hmm. So, I don't know, that's just something I thought of from a retail aspect and what it does for actual retailers and how that goes, so. Yeah. I guess, let's look into the purchase itself and I guess some of the controversy around it. So, there was this good tweet before by Rami Ismail that kind of summed up, I guess, a lot of people's feelings, and it's kind of had. There's been an interview since then that's kind of confirmed that. Even though Bobby Kotick has tried to say that the allegations didn't impact the sale, and it was a bunch of other mitigating circumstances,
look
like Call of Duty
champ.
Not performing well and all that stuff. He's like, it might have had a small part in dropping our stock, but it didn't really affect it. But there was a good tweet here by Rami, if I can find it here. Here he goes. Part of me is just absolutely terrified that today's news basically comes down to Microsoft brought Activision Blizzard, giving Kotick and cronies a fuck ton of money thanks to consistent sexual harassment claims, dropping the stock far enough that there was an opening to acquire. So I guess when as a business, like, there's an opening when it's cheaper, you got to go for it, right?
The opening was there for Microsoft regardless.
Yeah.
And I think when did the Activision stuff first fire
up? So that
up?
Dropped in July last year, and Phil Spencer came out saying, yeah, they're very worried about their dealings with Activision moving forward.
Do you know why? Because they had already started the conversations. There is no way that they began the conversations to acquire Activision at or even after the time that started. These business deals, when we're talking $70 billion, they began before that news dropped.
Well, this was reported in a Bloomberg article. I don't have the article on me at the moment, but I remember reading the quote. Like, Phil Spencer, a part of that, like, reached out 2 weeks after all this stuff dropped to kind of check in with Kotick on the kind of everything, and also make the inquiry if they wanted to sell or willing to be acquired. And then that was just kind of the seed planted for them. And yeah, they've kind of come back to that. So Kotick says it didn't impact it. And then there's the other thing that said that's kind of where the ball got rolling. So
that's interesting. I don't know how much I 100% believe it. Not that, like Phil has been very transparent about a lot of things over the journey. I've got no question, like, reason really to question his integrity over the journey, but just, like, even thinking about their own history with what they did with Bethesda and how these big acquisitions tend to play out, they're not so sudden. And yeah. I guess it is an extreme circumstance. Like, you could see a Bobby Kotick that's under pressure go, oh, yeah, okay, sure. Like, why not? That sounds like a fantastic idea. It covers my ass. I walk away with, you know, cumulative about $400 million when everything's all said and done. This is fantastic. But I just... It's only a nagging feeling because there's clearly some evidence there from the horse's mouth that says otherwise. But I just have a nagging feeling that it had to have begun before the acquisition.
This is from the Wall Street... Yeah, this is from the Wall Street Journal. That provided the catalyst for Microsoft's gaming head Phil Spencer to approach Mr. Kotick about a takeover soon after. According to people familiar with the matter, deal-hungry Microsoft had been long interested in Activision and had discussed a potential acquisition in the past, some of the people said, but Mr. Kotick was cool to the idea until Microsoft offered him a graceful exit.
Yeah, right. We'll see how it all plays out in that respect. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for now.
One of the big things that reactions has been like, fuck, Kotick, get him out, fire him, whatever. And a lot of these people mustn't be reading that, like,
that, you know,
the deal takes place in 2023 and they can't just do that. Do that now. It's not like they can sign and go, we'll buy you if you fire this person. But a lot of the vitriol is being about, like, fire Kotick, which, you know, the guy needs to be fired. The guy needs to be punished. Activision, fucking weak as fuck for not doing it already. And the fact that they haven't done it already means that, hey, he's going to get this massive $300 million payout once they are acquired. Or if he's terminated before the acquisition, it's going to be even more, $375 million. So he is set no matter what because... they didn't make a move beforehand. I guess maybe that's why the move was done. But like,
the interesting thing about that is, like, everyone was, you know, the board's there to, you know, make sure this is. But if the board, like, we all have a, because we've heard so much of the reporting about the Activision controversies in the last 6 to 9 months. If Bobby Kotick went, and you get a new head, that head is then going to go through and, you know, audit everything after that. And they're going to look at the board, and the board's going to come up a little bit dodgy because they've enabled this. They've allowed him to persist longer, and they're going to disappear. So they don't get their payday either. They're not going to kick the guy once, especially if that report that it was so recent after the news. 2 weeks is not a lot of time to do your proper research and then make a decision as to whether Bobby stays or goes, despite the fact that we all know he did wrong. You've got a process that you need to adhere to.
A lot of self-preservation.
If you've copped at this point a whiff that, hey, Microsoft wants to buy us, that's a lot of money that's going to come our way, even if we get shown the door afterwards. Let's keep this guy at the helm, because if we do, we could potentially get fired and miss out. We could disappear before, or fired, you know, we'll be part of a sweeping change before that money arrives in our pockets. Why would we do that? We'll keep Bobby around. I think... people are so, and understandably so, and reasonably so, concerned with the human cost that's gone on here in terms of the way people were treated. There was that horrible death that we heard about, the suicide, the woman who committed suicide off the back of the way she was being treated. Like, this is awful, awful stuff. And it's important that we keep all of that in mind as we discuss these things. But we're talking about executive level, board level, financial, marketplace decisions that are going on here. And suddenly that stuff doesn't matter anymore. As horrible as that sounds, and I don't mean it to sound that way, but suddenly that doesn't matter anymore to them. They're all about, how much money can I take with me when that door hits me on the ass on the way out? And I'm going to try and maximize that. These people have been rolling in money for years. That's what drives them. That's what motivates them. It's their greed. All that. They don't care about what's happened to Blizzard staff, the QA team that got fired from Activision. They don't care about any of that shit. They care about how much money is hitting their bank account at the end of each month, fortnight, well, whatever.
Has Ubisoft done anything else?
Not a hell of a lot either. At least their CEO doesn't get paid as much. But as we learned, their CEO doesn't get shit. Sorry, Eves, compared to Bobby. But yeah, like, it's horrible, and I'm not trying to sound horrible, but I understand why the decision-making process is what it is, because these people are driven by not human interest, but by their own financial, fiscal interests.
Yeah, it's never about the right thing. It's about how does this affect me, whether this is right or wrong, and I guess that's why he was kind of kept around. Which it's is like Survivor. You're playing Survivor. You want to keep someone that's going to take all the heat. Yeah, yeah. As bad as you are doing your decisions, you want to keep someone that's kind of the face of it.
Yeah, which is where like you can even raise the question marks over Xbox and what they've done here with this acquisition. Like, are you taking advantage of the fact that people have been taken advantage of so that you can get Call of Duty on Game Pass? Or are you trying to fix a company that's pretty broken?
Well, it's, I guess...
And it's clearly not the latter, because corporations don't think that way, unfortunately.
Well, a lot of people at Activision Blizzard, according to Jason Schreier, that he's reached out to, are apparently very optimistic that the change has happened and that the culture will change and some of Xbox leadership and systems and that will come across.
But there's a but.
They've talked to. But they are absolutely pissed that Kotick will make this ton of money and basically get off scot-free without consequences. So
the only way he gets in trouble and loses out on any money is if he's officially found guilty, responsible, whatever, for the stuff that's gone on. That's not an Xbox thing. Like, they can't fire him because he gets paid out. They've clearly agreed on something that sees him shown the door as soon as Xbox owns him and Phil takes control. That's the
best
his
they contract expires then, so yeah. I think he's going to be a part of the transition phase. Which I guess even then, why? I guess that makes life easier from, you know, owning a company and trying to understand how everything operates and works, but surely that won't be for long. Surely that's got to be like, you blink and you miss it type deal. So.
He's a piece of shit, but he's also a genius, Bobby Kotick. Like, Activision was in all sorts for a long time, and then he came in and he rebuilt the company and turned Call of Duty into what it is, and then he very wisely, on a financial side, brought in Blizzard and everything they've done, and then King came in most recently. Like, it's been genius move after genius move after genius move on the financial business sense. And he understands how those studios are working. Like, he's apparently very involved in that stuff because he's so driven by that bottom line that he makes it his business. So he's going to have valuable insights for them there. It's just as soon as he starts talking about the people that you all right, mate, that's it. We've got what we need. Get out. We don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yep. So, yeah, like I said, and a lot of people saying fire Kotick, obviously.
It'd be
like,
nice.
This guy's a fuckhead and he needs to get what's coming to him, but I highly doubt it will happen, especially beforehand if the payout is bigger. But at least we know he's not going to be in the gaming industry too much longer, even if he's going to continue to profit off it and get that massive payout. But at least he's going to be gone. So that's one good thing that's going to come of it next year when the takeover happens. But I guess I saw a lot of people tweeting about that and not enough people talking about the potential monopolization, consolidation, and kind of those fears as well. So this comes off the back of GamesRadar, who also noted that this happened today. On the heels of Microsoft's Activision purchase, the US government's Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission launched a joint review of antitrust merger guidelines. The DOJ and FTC monitor and may investigate mergers and acquisitions, which, to put it simply, could break antitrust laws, usually through anti-competitive or monopolistic agreements. In a joint live stream earlier today, the FTC chair, Lina Khan, another fucking Khan that's ruining the world, explained that the FTC and DOJ today are jointly launching a review of the merger guidelines to improve the ability of antitrust agencies to assess unlawful mergers and enforce regulations. The Activision deal was raised to reporters in the Q&A, but they refused to comment on it directly when reached by GamesRadar. FTC rep reiterated that the aforementioned Microsoft and Activision Blizzard acquisition is a proposed merger, so we can't comment it. So a really random thing for that to happen today, that they are kind of assessing all those rules and this biggest game story of all time involving mergers happens as well. So random, I wonder if there's going to be any implications of new guidelines that are brought forward that could halt this or potentially make it better than what we've seen with the Disney and Fox stuff and kind of stuff being taken off and put in our own platforms. That's the other thing I wanted to talk about, like release dates. How does this affect release dates of games? And, you see Disney, they put out their most recent Pixar movie straight to streaming instead of giving a cinema release. And they would, kind of on the back of Spider-Man coming out, all these other things coming out, like it's almost like they had to cannibalize their own stuff now.
You can almost get too big and get in your own way after a while.
That's right. So I'm not taking that in consideration. Could they just like, you know what, fuck, all right, Call of Duty, what, we're November? No, we're not going to do November. When's Horizon Zero Dawn? When's Forbidden West coming out?
But see, they don't need to do that.
We're going
to
do... they don't need to.
No, like, but I love the, like, especially the humor in the whole thing, but they are going to have a game yeah.
Every month, they just have,
at this point. Yeah.
But if they're going to have it like at every month, like, could that see like traditional games that do well in certain periods of the year, like say your November Black Friday periods, could they be kind of moved around where they're not going to be a successful player base? Like, I don't know, just all that kind of stuff. Like, do they have too much control over that? Or is it just Microsoft rubber stamping the Xbox thing on everything and letting all the other studios just act as they are? And
what it might do, and because Call of Duty is that one that sucks all the oxygen out at that holiday period. Like,
people avoid Call of Duty's release dates.
Yeah. So
unless you're EA, you put Titanfall there.
And Battlefield, and watch them both go to shit. The thing about that, I'm not so much looking at it through the lens of what can we do to obscure and hurt our competitors, you know, make the joke about Horizon or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of
their own...
You know, Halo's coming out, and... That's obviously not as big as Call of Duty, but in, you know, in terms of just raw numbers, that's obviously not as big. So what can we do to guarantee the maximum number of possible people? Let's move Call of Duty. You know, because Call of Duty will come out whenever it comes out, it doesn't matter, and it's going to sell like gangbusters. So let's give Halo more time, because now we control that. They can massage that franchise and a couple of those other key ones along the way to give everything else, maybe some of the lesser lights, and I hate to call Halo a lesser light, but when you compare it to Call of Duty in terms of scale and magnitude and popularity, it is
all hate mail can be directed to Paul on Twitter.
Yeah, no, I adore Halo. I fucking hate Call of Duty, but if
all
we look
hate
at,
mail can be
yeah, if we look at sheer numbers, obviously Halo doesn't stack up. So what can we do to maximize the number of people there? Well, let's give it more space, and we don't need to move Halo. This is the optimal time to go Black Friday, that sort of window. Christmas, so let's move Call of Duty, because it's going to sell regardless. As soon as it comes out, it'll sell its 25 million and we'll be done.
Mm.
And that's the same with, you know, Starfield. Okay, well, we can do that. We can drop that here, which will allow Obsidian more room to put Avowed out here, and it'll allow room for, like, they can manipulate their own. And unlike what we see from Sony most recently with, you know, Horizon, for example, we don't see leaks coming out of Microsoft and Xbox with, you know, here's the whole game and all the spoilers. And if, speaking of people DMing me, if anyone DMs me about Horizon, I'll fucking go ballistic. But anyway.
That's how you get someone to call, answer your text back.
Yeah, yeah. Shit. So, holy shit. Buddy. Anyway. So, like, they can really work that sort of stuff to maximize everything that they have. And Call of Duty can be one of those things that can really flex. I also don't think they need to go every single year going forward. Because they can't get in their own way.
They don't go every year. They're they do release every year, sorry. Yeah, but the alternate studios. Yeah. So the development cycle is definitely...
It's still 3 years.
Just,
but
it's not just like, oh, they only got 1 year to work on it. There's no like real excuse. They could have 3 years to work on it. Maybe they could take 1 year break so everyone gets an extra year.
Just to do it every 3 years.
What a project
there is. Every 18 months.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so... So that's pretty much the, I guess, the antitrust stuff. There's been various competing articles about, like, legal expert says they will have no problem with antitrust. And then on another website, I'd be like, legal expert says that they may come under scrutiny from antitrust. They may be in trouble or some stuff. So who knows what that's going to be like. But it'll be interesting to watch over the next
It'll get whatever. Looked at, but it'll get thrown out. It's if they try and do it again, if they try and pick up someone else, who cares who it is? But if they try and pick up someone else, that's when the question marks start to pop up.
Yeah. In general, I don't like the monopolization and consolidation. I hated that Disney brought Fox. I did in my tweet before earlier this morning about when Disney brought Fox, everyone's like, yay, the X-Men get to be in the MCU. Not realizing that a bunch of titles, a bunch of people got fired, let go. Studios merged. A lot of the Fox catalog got moved on to, I guess, Disney Plus, which is a streaming service that they launched after the acquisition, but there are now edited versions of some Fox properties because it doesn't align with the Disney etiquette going forward. Even a movie now that's coming out with Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas, I think, from Knives Out, and No Time to Die, who's just awesome. That was a movie that was supposed to come out now, and it's been pushed from cinema release because Disney has moved it, because it's not a... And that's not in Disney's wheelhouse, you know? It's not one of their animated titles or anything, so who knows where that's... I think that's going straight to...
Go on. Sorry? No, go on first.
I think it's... I don't even know what's happening. I Googled that today because I wanted to see it, and I knew it came out this week, and it's been pushed. I'm like, great, who the fuck knows what's happening to this? Because,
curious to know whether it was that Disney wasn't a big fan of it, or maybe there was something in it that the CCP... I mean, sorry, Tencent didn't like. Just making what? Some Chinese communists. Remember, Tencent owns a big chunk of Disney these days.
Oh, yeah. Do they?
Yeah. Yeah, they got a stake in them. So that's why we see what's an example? John Boyega, for example, out of the Star Wars posters and all those sort of things because
in
China.
Oh, that's right. Disney pulls Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas through deep water from theatrical release calendar yesterday. Disney pulled the upcoming erotic thriller Deep Water from its theatrical release schedule. The film was supposed to hit theaters on January 14, 2022, but Disney did not give a reason behind the decision to pull it. Well, whatever decision they've done to pull it has cost my decision to pull it as well. So that's that upsets me. But I'm just worried about things like that happening now that they're just all under one banner. Well, we own everything. Well, we can just fuck it. We'll screw these type of people. You know, it's different, I guess, and maybe in the gaming space because, like, there's no big indie developer there. It's not like, we're going to shut that studio down, or all those indie people are going to just work on AAA games, or we're not going to innovate anymore, all these cool ideas, well, all that stuff. So I guess that's a negative of it, but I'm sure there's some positives as well.
Yeah, there's some positives in the sense it might give the likes of Compulsion, the really small fries, a bit of room, for example. Like, you could go and do it here, and we'll keep our big franchises away and give you some room. And we own so many of them now that... That's going to help you. Like, there's not many left.
Yep. All right, let's get down to the meat of it. I say that even though we're like 40, 50 minutes in. What does it mean for everybody else? So what does it mean for Ubisoft, EA, all your other subscription services? Of course, there's the PS version of Game Pass, Project Spartacus, that's kind of been rumored to launch this year with some kind of tier system. And it's funny that Phil kind of made that comment like, well, we don't have it all together, but it's great that this competition happened. That was like a few days ago.
Next
so he would have already known that all this stuff. what a troll. So what does it mean for those services? What does it mean for exclusives as well? Are we going to see more exclusives now? Capcom, Take-Two, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you PlayStation...
What does PlayStation do?
Yeah, if you PlayStation, they're obviously the biggest one. They're going to be the ones rocked by all this. Bethesda was bad. This is worse for them, especially because they had those alignments with several of their IP, from Call of Duty to Crash and Spyro and others. This is really, really going to hurt in a lot of ways. So they need to respond. I don't like it. You and I are both on the same page that this whole consolidation thing is just, it's too much. We're sick of it. But I think the reality is at this point is that PlayStation needs to, because they might be deemed as weak or pushovers and that sort of thing. And there's an optical component to this that's still important in terms of being able to continue to be the, hopefully, for their sake, the most dominant console in the market, then they need to be making moves as well. So they've done a bit of that. They've made some really smart acquisitions, smaller scale acquisitions, but some really smart acquisitions over the last few years. But all of those have been... I shouldn't say all, because there's a couple of exceptions, like Nixus, for example. But they're all studios who've had a lot to do with them over the journey. Bluepoint, Housemark, Insomniac. Like, they are known as PlayStation teams before they were actually officially PlayStation teams. So
doing
now,
second party exclusives, they've had long-standing relationships.
Yeah.
They're basically viewed as PlayStation parties anyway.
And almost in each case, there was an exception every now and then. Like, Housemarque put out a game with Ubisoft, Insomniac did Sunset Overdrive and Fuse. Like, there's always a couple little things here and there, but that's what you can do when you're independent. But they were associated and known as PlayStation franchise, and they've played a very honest game up to this point. They can't do that anymore. They're going to have to, you know, have a chat to a Square Enix, have a chat to a Sega, have a chat to Capcom. I think that's where PlayStation's going to take their... Like, if they go down this path, they're going to talk to their peers in Japan, because I think it's easy
Absolutely.
To pitch it, like, let's keep away from the big, scary Americans.
Yeah.
As much as like PlayStation is more Americanized these days anyway, like that Japanese element is diminished significantly. And we even saw that with what happened with Japan Studio in recent years. Like, they cut that thing right down to size, which was horrible, but that's what happened. They can turn around to Capcom and say, let's do it. Square Enix, let's do it. We were talking before we started recording today, and I was compiling a bit of research to talk about this exact topic, and then thankfully Jeff Keighley swept in and saved me about another 15, 20 minutes of extra work. Talking about the market caps for a whole bunch of these other companies. Now, you've got that number for Activision there. It was 40-something billion. Do you have that handy off the top of your head?
So for Activision Blizzard, yeah. So in 2020, it was $71.75 billion. Then after all the controversies and the low performing, titles like their Overwatch and not being able to get Diablo out, they dropped by 30% to $50.75 billion all the way to 2022, and then jumped back up to $65 billion in the back end of January here, which is obviously the price now and what their shares are priced at, $65 with Microsoft. Pitching that $95 purchase.
Yeah. So for perspective, then, if we take that number and use that as a benchmark, and we know that, as weird as it might have been, Activision was always the top dog. EA's market cap, $38 billion. Take-Two, who are usually, you know, in the eyes of a lot of people because of their 2K and their Rockstars and all those sort of things, and again, Rockstar, GTA, like, they've been considered in that top echelon with Activision and EA, but their market cap's $18 billion. Like, that's a third of what Activision's is. Bandai Namco, 15. There's a couple other kind of no names in there, but there's Embracer, 10.8. No one's going to get Embracer because they're just trying to gobble up everything themselves. The ones that might be of most interest to people in terms of the ones that people kind of suggest as potential options: Ubisoft, 7 billion. Konami, 6. Square Enix, 5.6. Capcom, 4.9. Sega, 3.6. Like, these are all on the table for PlayStation if they decide that they want to punch back. And I think, as much as I don't like it, they're going to have to at this stage. Look, I think they'll be coming to the table of a number of those companies, certainly the four at the bottom, Konami, Square Enix, Capcom, and Sega, and say, what can we do here? And if what we've seen in the case of Activision here is that Microsoft's paid an extra roughly 40% over what their market cap was.
Mm.
When Sony's market cap is $150 billion, they can pick up all four of those, hypothetically. They're not going to. But they could pick up all four of those and still not even come close to spending what Xbox just spent on Activision and do it with ease. So this sort of thing is quite possible. Yes, they don't have the same money that Microsoft does, but they can trade on their name. They can turn around to investors, banks, all those sort of things, go, you can give us this money because we're PlayStation and we're going to, you know, we just have to show you our slate and go, this makes this much, this makes this much, this makes this. You'll have your money back by whatever date, and they'll be fine. So you don't have to worry, even if they don't have the cash in hand. Like, we see Xbox just go, oh, we're giving them all this money in cash. Sony can't do that, but they can easily pay them back. They don't have any difficulties in doing that. So they can look at those sums and go, okay, well, Square Enix, $5.6 billion, we'll give you 9 or 10. Will you do it? Yes, no. Presumably, when you're going to offer almost double the amount that they're worth, they're probably going to say yes. There you go. You've just locked down one of the biggest publishers in the business with some massive IP.
It's so funny because, yeah, Ubisoft and EA already have that deal where they have Ubisoft, whatever their streaming service is, who cares, already on Xbox. So yeah, they have that relationship that they've just recently done. EA Play, I think it is.
Yeah, EA
is
Play. EA?
That's their service. That's already on, included in Game Pass.
EA reassess?
As well, so.
Do EA reassess some of that sort of thing, though? Because now, like, their biggest competitor,
I don't know how much money they're getting for it.
Was Activision. Their biggest competitor was Activision. And now Xbox is in a position to give all of the Activision stuff away for free. And specifically Call of Duty was their big competitor. That's going to really impact Battlefield and what it can do on the Xbox platform. Because people, already there was that, oh, do I go Call of Duty or Battlefield? And obviously the majority would go Call of Duty. But now there's a financial component for Joe Citizen where you're like, okay, maybe I might have gone Battlefield because maybe it just speaks to me a little bit more, but I wasn't so on that side of the fence. Like, I can be won over if I get the right game. Well, now it may not be the right game, but you don't have to pay a cent for it. Yeah. So maybe you don't go for Battlefield anymore. So this could potentially hurt EA as well. So maybe they start to, you know, realign. They're not going to You're not going to see EA bought out by PlayStation. But maybe they start to reassess where some of that exclusivity goes as well. So there's all those sorts of finer things that can stem from this in terms of, well, how does it affect our bottom line? Does it now make more sense for us to go here? Yes or no? And I think for a number of those companies we've rattled off, to align yourself now more with PlayStation is not necessarily a bad thing to ensure that you get the money rolling in the door that you still need to roll in the door.
Yeah, you already have those relationships with Square Enix as well with the Final Fantasy exclusivity deals that they've had here and there.
Yeah.
They've also got Forspoken coming up. That's a PS5 exclusive from memory, is it?
Yep, PS5 exclusive, yep. For now anyway.
So, yeah, a lot of these publishers will be looking over their shoulder like, hey, we might be able to sell here and get a bit of money for our shareholders and change kind of, you know, everyone wants a piece right now between Microsoft and Sony, so they might be able to get an inflated price. And that's the kind of end game, isn't it? To make more money for your shareholders.
Yeah.
You can do that by being sold.
How about Ted? Like, with everything that's gone in the last few years, how about Ted Price and Insomniac? They sold for like 100 and something million. Those poor sods. They always had the relationship and they would have loved to have been there, but they would have been stoked with the amount of money that was coming into their pockets. And then all of a sudden, Bethesda gets bought for $7 billion and all these other companies. And now Activision on top, they're going, oh, shit. We're keeping PlayStation afloat right now, and we sold for $100 million. What have we done?
All right, I'm going to ask you a couple of off-the-top-of-my-head questions. PlayStation, hypothetically, if they could acquire two publishers, because, all right, this is the big thing. You know, PlayStation made their acquisitions with some studios recently, Housemarque, all that stuff, what you said before. And then Microsoft also made some with Psychonauts. Who's that? That is...
Double Fine.
Double Fine. And they also did Ninja Theory.
Ninja Theory, for Hellblade.
So, see, that's... I don't really have a problem with that because they're buying studios, but when you start buying these massive publishers with an umbrella of studios underneath it, that's when it's like, what the fuck, this is not good. You want to reach out, buy a studio, big deal. But if you're buying like a Ubisoft or an EA or a Capcom, Take-Two, Square Enix, it's like, now you're just trying to take over the whole entire market, which is, you know, that's the goal of make money, businesses, whatever, but competition, all that kind of stuff. PlayStation, two publishers. Who would you like them to purchase in your perfect world? I've got some off-the-wall answers I just thought of.
Are you talking about my perfect world in terms of my tastes? What I like as a gamer?
Your tastes.
Because
your
tastes. My tastes as a gamer versus what is best for PlayStation are two very different things.
All right. Give me...
I can answer both. I'm happy to answer both.
Yeah, answer both. So which ones do you want?
And are we saying they've got the cash? Like, they're just good to go?
Yeah, they're good to go.
All right. Well, okay, so folks, we'll get to my taste second then. What's best for them is to go for the top two dogs, which is EA and Take-Two. Because Take-Two obviously gives you like GTA. Like, pulling GTA in is the equivalent, perhaps even more so, of
Call of Duty.
Xbox locking in Call of Duty.
Well, Call of Duty, the highest selling game in the last 13 years running. GTA 5.
The highest selling single game.
The highest selling single game of all time.
Yeah.
I think it's... Is it still the highest? No,
it'd be right up there.
It's still under Tetris and Minecraft, but they're multi-platform, and then Tetris is including a various number of versions. But I think it's like, and I say it as single SKU, even though it's been across three generations with a version coming, single game instead of like Tetris this, Tetris that. So, huge, massive.
So Take-Two is obvious in the sense that you get Rockstar, you get 2K, and everything comes under that. So you get the sports games, which is a big deal too, because keep in mind, they lost MLB, the exclusivity to MLB, even though they own it and develop it and publish it. It's still weird. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of things to that. And then the EA side of it is that one of the big things that people have been talking about post-Bethesda is that the Bethesda acquisition is that Xbox is the home for Western RPGs. But if you pull them, and as I've even highlighted today, they're now starting to become the home for the FPS as well. If you pull EA across, you get your Battlefields, so you address your first person shooter thing. You get BioWare, you get Respawn, that helps you address some of your, well, again, Respawn helps with the shooters. They also can help with anything,
Apex.
Anything, because they're unbelievably good at everything. Vince Zampella is a freak, in a good way. And you get BioWare that if they can write this ship, you get Dragon Age, you get Mass Effect, which are still two of the Western RPGs with the greatest level of cachet. So they're like they're obvious acquisitions.
Yeah, shooter front. You've got Apex, bring back Titanfall. You've got Medal of Honor as a dormant franchise. I think they did like a PC version a couple of years ago.
Oh, there was a VR game.
And then you've got one of the best shooters of all time stuck in the PlayStation 2 that was supposed to have a trilogy. That is Black. Bring that back. So
I knew this was going to come. Black was going to come at some point. As soon as you said it pre-show, I'm like, he's going to find a way to wedge that bad boy in.
Absolutely. Of course I am. I'll make my own little segues and things into there. So you're saying in a perfect world, it would be EA and Take-Two.
Well, look, it's not a perfect world because I don't want any of this stuff to happen. But considering where PlayStation's at, if they're going to buy up and they're going to buy two, you go for the top.
If it's now an arms race, PlayStation has to enter this space so that Microsoft doesn't keep acquiring things and kind of blows them out of the console space, then that's what that is. So EA and Take Two. I would also say that is the smart answer. EA and Take Two from money wise, or then they could possibly, depends on their direction, they could really niche down and go like Capcom, Square, and maybe From Software. And really niche down on those kind of Souls-like and like leaning into those Japanese relationships as well. So
I mean, I think
EA and Take Two would be absolute, you know.
Yeah, I think those ones are the more realistic options to kind of go down that Japanese path, as we highlighted before. It's let's do this together. Let's fend off the Americans like that. As much as there is this Japanese
there
culture
is that,
still,
yeah, absolutely.
There is that Japanese cultural thing, which is we'd want to keep the. Not in like some sort of racist way. I'm not trying to suggest anything like that, but like it's always been about the look after our own first and foremost. And to do that, like let's pull in Square Enix. Let's pull. God forbid. I can't say.
Go on, say it.
Could there be? I think a lot more needs to happen for this to actually become a possibility. But could Sony and Nintendo get the gang back together again? Could
they're gonna release a Switch with a disc drive just to throw it all back.
it's not gonna happen. Like Nintendo will laugh them out the door just like they laughed out Microsoft all those years ago. But there might be a little bit of conversation between them, like not an official acquisition, but some sort of little partnership to just protect each other a little bit. We don't want
And that's where that Project Spartacus could come into play as well. It's not acquisition is the be all and end all. If they're going to have this streaming service, maybe there could be like paying of the money up front and then getting a Capcom title. Maybe a Deep Down comes back, or maybe you see, I knew I'd pop you a new Monster Hunter game or something. Boy. Like Final Fantasy is the new Final Fantasy 16, which is not coming out this year. Sorry, Max, and I guess good luck. That'll be good for Betson. But that will be on their Project Spartacus or whatever their version of Game Pass is, like PlayStation Plus.
Yeah.
I actually think someone's used that or whatever. So maybe that could be the other route instead of acquisition and strengthening those deals and partnerships. So,
well, that's why I think, like, even if they were to actually go down the publisher acquisition path, that they've already got really strong relationships with the Japanese companies. So why not go for a Ubisoft or a Take-Two or a EA? Because we can lock them down. We don't have to worry about them defecting and playing funny buggers and going elsewhere. And we can still turn around to Square Enix and say, well, your games still don't sell to the Xbox audience. Mm. So you may as well still buddy up with us anyway. There's that component to the whole thing as well. But all going well, no one does any more of this shit. And we just have some purity to gaming again.
Yeah, so what are your two based on your own taste that we'd love to see?
Capcom and Square Enix.
Yeah, alright, cool.
I'm a JRPG guy through and through.
Mine is Devolver Digital.
Oh, yeah, right.
And Annapurna Interactive. So all the indie games. You got Shuhei there leading the new indie division. You see all these indie games launch on Game Pass day one, or they launch on Switch and Xbox or vice versa, and they don't come to PlayStation, or they're trapped on PC. Nah, let's get them. Let's go back to when the PS4 launched. Let's support indies again. Let's go full throttle. Let's make that out, you know. Devolver
without having full
just
throttle.
Fun, outlandish, you know. So those are my two fantasy picks, because those are probably the most games that I would play out of those.
They'd be fantastic choices. Like, I'd be stoked. They're not going to carry the clout. They're unfortunately not going to bring the masses over.
It's not going to break the internet like this.
But it'd be pretty cool. I'd be stoked.
The PlayStation E3 event is held in a car park for Devolver. Love it. Before we close, just the other thing I had in my notes here, PlayStation's lack of diversity in their portfolio. So a lot of people's criticisms of PlayStation's exclusives have been they're all third-person story-driven narratives or open world, like your Horizon, your God of War, Spider-Man, Last of Us, Uncharted. They're all the same type of game, barring Gran Turismo 7, which we hardly ever get. It's like once in a blue moon, not like a Forza in every alternate year. So the fact that people are already complained about that in the past, I don't really care because those are the type of games that I love and I give a fuck about. But the fact that the Activision buys like a Call of Duty, a Crash or whatever, and they pull all those type of games from the PlayStation library, then are they missing the big shooter? Like, do they need a shooter because now they don't have a Call of Duty? Do they need an exclusive shooter to be on their platform? Are they missing out on that?
They do. So. They've not had to worry about, you know, obviously there's been the chorus of bring back Killzone and Resistance, me certainly leading the Resistance charge.
See, and that's how I segue you talking about Resistance.
Yeah, there you go. There's been that chorus for a long time, but they've not needed to entertain it because they've had partnerships with Call of Duty and with Destiny. And so it's been fine. Also, maybe Bungie can pop on the tail. I saw a great little meme that was going around today, earlier today, which was like a conversation between Sony and Bungie, ending with "you up?" question mark. So that was great. But anyway, all that aside, it has been something they've been able to paper over a little bit because of Call of Duty and Destiny over the PS4 and early PS5 generation. But the Call of Duty one was the big one, and it's gone, or presumably will be gone. So they need to start forging other partnerships. Now, we are seeing this a little bit. Remember, there's been these other studios that are kind of ex-Call of Duty people, but they're going to be forming new IPs. And will they or won't they be exclusive? I mean, they will at the get-go, but then when a sequel comes along, they say, thanks, PlayStation, you helped us establish our brand. Now we're going multi-plat because there's more money in that. Those sort of things are still to feature. Maybe PlayStation does the old PlayStation thing and make sure you can develop, we'll help you out, but we keep the IP. That might be a smart move on their part. But they need to find a way to get FPSs going, whether it's reviving the aforementioned franchises, pulling Bungie back in and really aligning themselves tightly with them, because obviously that was, you know, Destiny was PlayStation for the long time there. Still is, for the most part. They need to find a way to get the FPSs going and just diversify further. I don't think today's move hasn't compounded the issue any further. In fact, my big issue with Xbox over the journey is that they're all about shooters. And that's not really changed. And again, obviously, you add the Blizzard suite on top of that. But that's not going to shift, as sad as it is, it's not going to shift a massive number of consoles because that audience really gravitated those things on PC. So it doesn't really impact Sony too much.
Yeah, it's Call of Duty subscription.
Does. Yeah.
It pushes Game Pass more than a hardware.
It's the Activision side of things that really impacts PlayStation, and Call of Duty is what Activision is these days. So that's where they've been wounded, and that's what they need to try and rectify. It'd be nice to see some further diversity. It is interesting, I guess, when you marry up all this conversation that, you know, now they really need to double down on shooters. That Bend, with all the stuff that was going on with them recently, Bend actually pitched a Resistance game. And it Silly. Got turned away, breaking my heart in the process. But, Jeff Ross talking about that recently in one of his interviews that he's done as he's doing the circuit, clearly free of any NDAs, is just shooting from the hip right now. That turned out to be a thing that was kicked around and that got rejected. But I think they need to start looking at whether it's some of those legacy IP, these new studios that are developing first-person shooters for them, buy them, lock them down, and then really invest to make sure that they are, you know, that PlayStation seal of quality, not that they have the old Nintendo-style seal of quality, but, you know, that they stack up alongside what a Naughty Dog or an Insomniac or a Sucker Punch or whoever, a Guerrilla could create. Like, they need to be of that sort of tier to be at all relevant, to at all help with that optical concern that PlayStation has right now. Because, yeah, it's now, with this move today, it's now gotten to the point where they do need to act.
Yep. absolutely do.
Bring back Mag.
I was going to say that comment. Damn, you stole my joke. And then the PlayStation servers can go down for a month. PSN can go down for a month and totally bury that game.
Wasn't that SOCOM? Was that SOCOM? I think it was SOCOM.
It was SOCOM. Yeah. I can't wait to fire up Call of Duty next year or the year after, and it just has like a Microsoft Studios on it, on a PlayStation. Fantastic. So anything else you want to jump into before we kind of wrap this up, Paul? Or you've said everything you wanted to say?
I've said everything I want to say. It's just real. I think
dear God, help us all.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing is, at this point, will PlayStation actually try and punch back? And I think it's at the point where they need to. We don't like it, but I think they need to. I understand why they would. I won't like it, even if it is Square Enix. Like, I love Square Enix, and to know that everything is going to be on that platform going forward exclusively, and it's my preferred platform, like, that speaks to me in so many ways, but I'd still rather us not get to that point. I'd rather more people get to experience these games. I think that's the thing that frustrates me the most, is that, like, I don't like Call of Duty, but millions of people do, and now we're cutting off a whole bunch of people. It's the same with what we're seeing with Bethesda. There's so many PlayStation fans that would have lost their minds over Starfield or were itching to play Elder Scrolls 6, and they can't afford two consoles. Now, Xbox is doing their best to help with that because you can play, you know, xCloud and all those sorts of things. But then you get countries like our own where the infrastructure's not fantastic.
Phil Spencer's a carny. He's like, I want everything to be played everywhere. Oh, no, not on PlayStation.
Except on PlayStation. Actually, here's a question for you, and one that was bubbling in my head before. Will we get to a point where... Let's suppose PlayStation doesn't get... I think you can know where I'm going here. Let's suppose PlayStation doesn't try and double down and do what Xbox is doing, because they don't have the same level of means. They do have the means, but they maybe can't do it for whatever reason. Could you ever see a day where Game Pass actually is on the PlayStation cross-media bar? Do we still call it the cross-media bar now with the PS5?
Oh, geez, do.
I do.
Who knows? I don't think so. But it'll get to that point. Like, once again, Game Pass is a utility. What TV can't play Netflix? Is anyone going to buy a TV that can't play Netflix now? No.
Yeah.
You're going to buy a phone that doesn't have access to any of these kind of apps?
Yeah.
No. Some of the TVs that aren't even smart that you can't download apps on at least have Netflix, YouTube, or Stan. Usually, those three are already pre-installed on there. So.
Yeah, it's true. Your TV, I mean, we know Xbox has been leaning towards it anyway, but your TV will just have Game Pass installed on it. Maybe it has Spartacus as well. And there you go, console. No need for a console anymore.
I'm going to play my games on Game Pass on my phone, and then I'm going to put in a Chromecast, and then I'm going to throw it to the TV.
Holy shit.
And then I'm going to Bluetooth my PS5 controller to it.
Just out of spite.
The year is 2025, 26, Paul, and we're... We have a shitty UI. We're playing with offset sticks. There are no more trophies, only achievements. The world is on fire.
Just looking at my Xbox controller, my PS5 controller, and... Fuck it. It doesn't even matter anymore.
Yeah, I've been playing Halo with the PS5 controller.
So. Yeah, and I played God of War on PC for a little bit with an Xbox controller just for a laugh. Like,
yep.
That hurt a little bit. I did that, and I felt a little bit gross afterwards. Went and had a shower.
Very nice, and I think I'll be doing that in a minute as well. Having a shower, not doing anything gross. Nothing gross in the shower either.
You do you, champ.
Yeah, that's right. You. So, Paul, thanks for joining me. Thanks for having this discussion. It's kind of lonely to kind of have these type of discussions on my own. Just come here, point and click, and press record, and just blur out shit because... Yeah, it's not as fun, bounce off each other's opinions, get differing opinions as well. So thank you very much for talking to me, and
you know me, I love having a platform to talk PlayStation.
That's right. In an alternate universe, Paul, we'd be doing this every week, but alas, we're not. So
who knows?
Who knows? Come here, get your Microsoft fix. I guess it'll have to be Microsoft fix going forward if PlayStation's going to be wiped out. So
I, for one, as a teacher, thoroughly look forward to Microsoft for some reason buying the education department and teaching students not history or maths anymore, but just about how the history of Xbox works and the cost of each of those acquisitions they made.
Yep, it's very good. Paul, where can the good people find you? Obviously, you're over at Player... Two, doing a lot of reviews, video content, and you've also got your podcast, Dev Diary. Enlighten us all.
Yeah, I mean, you've summarised that pretty well. Player2.net.au is the website where all things reviews and previews and links to all the videos and all those sort of things will appear. So go check all that out. Same with the Player2 YouTube channel as well. But you highlighted there, Dev Diary is my little podcast baby. It's an interview series where I talk to developers from throughout the globe, all about their journeys through the industry so far. And we've had some fantastic guests. I know this has been a very Xbox-centric one. If you're a PlayStation fan, in the next few months, I've got a really fascinating character that's going to be coming on that's going to share some stuff about her. Well, I don't know if they're going to share stuff about the game, but their career and the fact that they are working on a hotly anticipated PS5 title. but I won't say any more about that until we're off camera. But, yeah, I mean, like, Dev Diary's my baby. I love it. Please, if you like learning about the people who make the games that you love, then please consider chucking it as a subscription on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Reviews, all those sort of things are really appreciated as well. 5 stars. It's all the usual spruiking. But please, I love that show. I'm looking to take it to Patreon over the course of the next few months as well. I've got under that umbrella, I'm looking to bring in Dev Diary Next Generation, or Dev Diary Next Gen, as I'm dubbing it, which is basically looking at that next tier of creator that's coming through. So talking to students, people who are working on their first games, all of that sort of thing.
Degrassi, baby, Next Gen.
Holy shit. Maybe I need to change the name now. I can't do that. But like, you're looking at that next tier of creator, the ones that we don't know about yet. So they're not going to be like your big marquee attractions, but they are the people who are going to create that next tier of title that, like, you'll come to know these people eventually, I hope. Who knows? Maybe I'll one day be chatting to the next Hideo Kojima. Never know.
I hope you have a translator for that interview as well.
Well, yeah, that'd be handy too. But, like, English-speaking equivalents of Hideo Kojima.
Yes, I'm being an idiot. Yeah, so there you go. Check out Paul's stuff. And if you like this podcast, you can check out Radio Watson on all good platforms. Apple, Spotify, Google Play, good podcast fetching apps, and even the bad ones as well. Leave us a review on Apple and Spotify. We would love it. Much appreciated there. Of course, if you're listening to it, you already know you've heard of it. But if you enjoy this conversation and you have people that you think you'd love these type of conversations, tell them. Hook a brother up. So, yeah. Paul, thanks for coming along.
No worries, mate.
Thanks, everyone, for listening, getting this far. Until our next time, our Microsoft dystopian future, where they rule the world.
All hail Phil Spencer.
That's right. No, I won't say that. On behalf of Paul, myself, Buddy Watson, this is Radio Watson, out.